Welcome to Star from the Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, Deadcom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Justin Weinhardt joins me to talk cast every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions, the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk Show website at www.talkshow.com. Search for Cloudy 17702 or Starfleet Universe On Call. You will find us there. And of course, for those people in the know, we also do a co-broadcast over on twitch.tv. So find us there. Just go to twitch.tv/SFU On Call and you will find us there. The broadcast usually starts out somewhere between 9:30 and 9:35. That's usually when it starts, because I always like to wait for people to show up so that they don't miss a thing. So, and of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to find me on Twitter, my account there is also sfuoncall. I announce the topic for the week and also post the YouTube video, which I record. Shocker. And also, I have a personal account there with Paul Franz. It's PaulFranz. And just a reminder, I'm very proud of being an Orioles fan, Catholic, and I love technology. So if one of those doesn't bothers you, then I would recommend don't follow me. And of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. When it comes to ADB is pretty quiet this week. They must have been busy with the counters. I know there were supposed to be coming out, but I just checked on their Facebook page and they have not said anything. So all's quiet. Oh, waiting for the big announcement, whatever that is, for the next product to be released. And when that happens, I will tell you. And so we go on to the SFB Online tournament, which is the Sapphire Star 7, or up to 7 tournament. And round 2 is finally complete. That leaves the semifinal round. There's one semifinal round game yet to be complete, which is Jack Taylor versus Jeff Clark, with Data Medson beating Seth Szymanski to make it into the finals. And when it comes to the libraries, unfortunately, not much progress there. Actually, no progress at all. So, unfortunately, you know, things are at a standstill, and we'll just have to wait and see in the future how that all goes. And with that, that is news for this week. And it's me, it's the one and only Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, well, it's me. Dave's in the chat room, and the question is, where are you? I'm sure you're just sitting there relaxing, having a good old time. Hopefully you're not in Texas, because Texas is having some issues, and but definitely we're praying and have those people in our minds and our hearts at this moment in time. Tonight, the topic for this evening is going to be Starfleet Marines. I'm actually going to go through the game a little bit. I might do a follow-on session next week or another time, because I know I'm not going to hit everything, and I haven't had a chance to actually replay the game by myself as a solo game. So some of these rules are still a little rusty on me, because last, as I told the person in the chat room, Iggy, last week, that I had not played Starfleet Marines for quite a few years. So I was actually reading up on them today, just to make sure that I remember some of the rules, and It is kind of what I remember, though I definitely got some things wrong last week. So hopefully this week I can get things better and people will actually enjoy, at the very least, my corrections and some of my explanations. Let me just do this. Excuse me. One thing I did was I actually took a picture of the maps, because I got both maps, because I got both modules, both the Assault and Last Stand modules. So they give you two different, totally different maps. I think I bought the counters, but I don't remember if I do have them or not. But at the very least, I should be able to share the map as you see it now. Here's one of the maps. I forget if this is the Last Stand or the Assault. This is Last Stand. And I can barely read it right down here. Which is interesting because the idea is that these are kind of fields and so forth. That's not correct. The first one, the Assault, that one has fields. And here's your little town, and you got the roads going around, different hills. I forget if these are hills or valleys or what. I think these are valleys because of the shadows you see here. I have to double check. But I know these are like hills, this showing different elevations here. And I will show you this one. This is the one which came from that came with Assault. These here, those are supposed to be like fields, like corn or whatever crop is at that moment. I remember playing I think it's the first scenario that's in Assault. And the whole idea is that you have these troops coming in. They need to take this town. And in the town, you've got a bunch of militia. And I remember looking at the scenario and going, why would the militia ever leave the town? There's no reason to leave the town because of the town gives quite a few advantages when it comes to things like fire and overall spotting. Because to actually fire on someone, you have to be able to spot them. And so that makes it a major advantage in that case. And then, of course, you got some water here and so forth. Got some lava over here. Now, I'm assuming this is a mini volcano. Not really a volcano per se. This looks a little small for a volcano. That might be a very small volcano. And here's some more hills. I remember the scenario that I played with, that this is a right here. I remember using this approach coming into here, and then I think jumping over to the fields to approach the town. Hitting one when you go around here, this level here, and this one, since this is the same level as this. And this is one level higher. There's no spotting. You can't see them. Now, I forget where they were, but they had some turrets. I'm not sure if it's in that scenario or another scenario. I was playing a game with turrets. Now, turrets are buggers. Because that's one thing that I remember asking Steve Cole about, which is the number of times a turret can fire. And I was correct in my reading. And which is, turrets can actually fire five times a turn, and I'll get to that in a bit about how that whole thing works. That's weird. I'm a little dark. Interesting. But anyhow, let me get the rules just for a moment. I just wanted to first show you off what the map actually shows, because I don't think they actually have one on the website, and that I don't think if you can capture a copy of the map from what I'm showing you, you've got a darn good I don't know how you, because this is grainy for me, you know, because I can barely read the these. So if you really want to steal it, buy it. You know, now let's just go through the game real quick. Not real quick, because I want to go through some of the stages. Now, as I remember it, let me go back here. Get into it. See, the thing is, this is one of those. It's like, as I described it last week, which is, it is kind of like FNE. And that is, FNE, there aren't that many rules, but there's all these little descriptions of these different pieces of what's going on. For example, okay, the first, and this is the sequence of play. Okay, like FNE, you've got an active player and you have inactive player or players. So the active player can do certain things and an inactive player can only do certain things. So that is the same when it comes to FNE. Now, the first step in the sequence of play is starting phase. Starting phase, basically, all it does is, blah, blah, blah. Right, okay, which basically just means, okay, I had to reread it because I thought I read something else. I did not want to get it wrong. And that is that, actually, let's do this because I can't have it there, but I can have it over here. So I don't have to keep on turning around. And that is the starting phase. The only thing you do during the starting phase is you remove all of the opportunity fire markers. You'll find out when those are used a little bit later on. Next step is the beam out phase. So basically, if one of the things you're going to be doing is going to be beaming out, as in troops get removed from the map, you know, they're transported up to a ship that's overhead. Obviously, this is one of those things that depends upon the scenario. And in the case of a beam out phase, obviously, to get beamed out, you have to survive. And if you decide, okay, I move my guys, and you have to wait for the inactive players to move. It's not until you get back to your turn as being the active player that you actually can beam out. So you have to kind of survive until then. So it's one of those things that if you decided to beam out, it's going to take a little bit of time. Though, obviously, if it's beating the turn, you might want, you can decide then, based on the tactical situation and those pieces. Okay, the next one is the fire phase. Now, the fire phase allows you to, that's when you attack. That's combat. And combat is done using two dice that are rolled, which are modified by the rules. There's multiple. Oh, man. That's one of the things that I noticed is that I'll show you real quick. here's a listing of the modifications, of the modifiers. And then we have these modifiers. So it's half a page of just modifiers. Let me look at some of these modifiers real quick. For example, if the target is infantry in a vehicle battle position, because you can have improved battle positions and vehicle battle positions, you have to add two. If target is a higher elevation, you add one. For example, as I showed you before, if you're in like the plane and you're firing on at the enemy, which is on top of a hill, you know, you have to add a plus one. If the attack is at range one, subtract one. This does not apply to close assault. This is not added to the close assault bonus. Close assault is another step. There's three possible outcomes from that, which is one, you missed. The other one is killed, and also it could be that they are stunned. And if they're stunned, they still stick around. But in the case of stunned players, they cannot move, because one thing that I did not read about the starting phase, which is that units can be either upside right or upside down. Upside down means, depending upon who you're talking about, if you're talking about the current active player, it's possible that they got turned over because they were stunned. Another reason why they might be turned over, flipped, is because of they fired during opportunity fire. That's wrong. No, they don't get turned over. Mechanic, it gets kind of confusing because it can be used for multiple things. If someone stunned you, you'd have your unit turn upside down, in which case you would not move for that turn, so you actually wouldn't do anything. It wasn't until after your turn, as being the active player, your turn was done, would those then be turned upside right. This marking here is saying here that, okay, after, you know, a unit is, okay, active player designates any one of his units that he wishes to have conduct a fire attack, and the target of that attack. Two dice are rolled, then, you know, could total modify by the rules and the effect, you know, combat, you know, that's includes, you know, map modifiers because of the scenery on the map, you know, and the unit is either removed or stunned or not affected. That's as I just pointed out. After this, the firing unit is turned upside down. A unit cannot fire and move. Just a note here, it's just reminding people that you can't fire and move your piece on the same turn. So that's kind of critical to the mechanic of the game, which is you can't walk and chew gum at the same time. At least that's the way I see it. So you can't fire and move on the same turn. So you can, if you decide to fire from a certain unit, that unit is now stuck. It will not be moved. Now, that can be quite dangerous. because of, and yeah, because of you're stuck. And now if you have enemy units close by because you fired on them, they could actually come up close and maybe do what's called a close assault, which is the next step, which is the active player may have any of his units which are right side up and adjacent to the units of the other player conduct close assaults in accordance with, you know, L5.3. And this may result, this is one of those things that with you do a close attack, a close assault, and this may result in the unit moving into the adjacent hex of the target, and will result in the unit conducting close assault turned upside down after the close assault is over. So you get close assault is when you have adjacent units. So they're one range one is what they are. Now, just because you're range one doesn't mean you have to do a close assault. Oh, there it is. Which was, I don't remember. Which is, I was looking at what the modifier is. Die roll modifier and requirement that is, if the last defending unit is destroyed, you must move it. Right. I don't see it. I'm looking for it and I don't see it. I apologize. Okay. Do they have it in this one? Oh, there it is. There it is. If the attack is a close assault by a qualified unit, subtract 2. Subtract 1 in the case of a militia. Units in area mode cannot attack by close assault. So you get a subtraction of 2 for doing a close assault. You don't add that. You have also, of course, if you decide not to do a close assault, you get a one bonus. You know, subtract only 1. So you do get a bonus for being right next to it. Now, of course, here's always, I look at this, and this is always the gotcha. That the only way you can actually do a close assault. The only way you can do a close assault, this means that the only way to do a close assault is when you actually, your opponent also wants to do a close assault, so he wants to stay there because of you to do a close assault. You have to move in to the adjacent hex the turn before. After that, then you can do a close assault. But that means either you have to pin the guy when you move, you have to pin him so he can't move. Because that's one thing I looked a lot of the combat. I didn't look as much when it comes to movement because I wasn't sure if with movement, if two units can be in the same hex. I forget when it comes to Starfleet Marines if that is the case or not. Worst case scenario, I will bring that up. I will correct it next week. I'm pretty sure that when it comes to enemy units can't move through the same an occupied hex, you know, for another player. And I don't remember if you actually can move through hexes of your own units. In other words, you know, if you have an infantry unit in hex like 1530, and then you have another infantry that wants to move now from 1531 to 1529, does he have to go around them, or can he go right through the hex? So it only costs two movement points. Oh, and that okay. It's possible there might not be two movement points. It might be more. It all depends on terrain. So, I apologize for like my little bit of confusion there. Now, here comes those wonderful little things called opportunity fire. The active player marks any active unit that is, which is not upside down, which is they have not done a close assault. They have not done they have not fired. So, and then you take the opportunity counters and you put them on top of the counters and say, okay, these units are going to be using opportunity fire. Now, as previously mentioned, you can't walk and chew gum at the same time. These units cannot move in the movement phase of the same of the same player turn. So if they're marked to be used as opportunity fire, they cannot move, which is the next step. Vehicles and infantry can use vehicles and infantry can use opportunity fire. Shuttles and gunboats cannot, which is big surprise because of they're going way faster. And so it makes it a lot more difficult to do something along those lines. Now, the next step in this whole process is, of course, movement. You've done all your firing at everything and all the killing. The active player may now move some or all of its units. All depends on which ones have been marked for opportunity fire or have already had action in the fire or close assault phase. Here's one thing that it does say. Each unit which are stunned can move one hex away from the enemy. So in other words, if they are stunned, they can still... I was wrong before when I said they could not move. They actually can move if they were stunned. Now, here comes the confusion in my mind in that, okay, your units are going to be upside down if they're stunned. And then also your units that have fired are also going to be upside down. So in other words, you have to keep track of those units, the reason why they're upside down. They're upside down because they were stunned from the previous round? Are they upside down from previous action? Or are they upside down because of they fired? Or, they did an action either in the fire or close assault phase. That is not known. Now, it mentions here that if during this phase, that any newly arriving units by transport or shuttle are marching onto the map, are placed on the map. So basically, when you're bringing troops in, you're beaming them in, dropping them off via shuttle, or a ship. Actually, I'm assuming ship, even though it does not mention ship explicitly here. Or just marching onto the map. They were on the edge of the map, and they finally made it to the battle. Now, here's the one thing, though, which is that I noticed, because I'm an SMB player, so I noticed these things. And that is... I'll get to... that is that it doesn't say what order those have to be done in. If you wanted to, from my understanding of the rules, because there's no set order for movement, and I don't see it here in the sequence of play. It might be later on in the description of movement, but I don't think so because of transporting downs is not movement per se. So in that case, the question is, Yeah. Yeah, Iggy, no pin markers. Yeah, it's, there's no concept in Starfleet Marines as pinning. Now, in my mind, you can, in theory, pin a troops, you know, depending upon where you got them located. If you got them basically got their backs against the wall, against the mountain, then, you know, they might not be able to go up the mountain. You know, they might not have enough movement points because of infantry can only move two. And I'm not, and if you have something that's like a cliff where it's like three, I have to look, but I'm pretty sure like if you have a three level cliff, you have no way of making it up that hill. So you're pinned. So you're completely pinned at that point. Now, yeah. So that to me, that's always a gotcha. Oh, that's good question. That's an excellent question. And I'm just, let me just check. I did not check that. Let me check to see if they have it on here. Right. Okay. Because I know that ADB actually explicitly mentions how big the hexes are. Oh, come on. Nope. Okay. I'm checking and I don't. Oh, there they are. Actually, it is. Each hex is 100 meters across side to side. So it's pretty big. Can't pin them. There's no three count either. Oh. Okay, I guess so. Best, but yeah. So the hexes are 100 meters across. Now, so that to me that's a weird thing, which is that there's no explicit ordering when it comes to transporting a unit down and movement. So in theory, because I don't see, I've not checked the rules to see when it comes to beaming down, but in theory, you know, unless it states elsewhere that you could beam someone, you can beam troops down and then move them that turn. Or, you know, in the case of a shuttle can drop them off and then the infantry that gets dropped off, because actually they can bring down, vehicles too. But one thing to mention, which is, and as I pointed out in the previous step about opportunity phase, which you mark units for opportunity fire, moving units may be subjected to opportunity fire by enemy units, which are so marked, or snapshots by other enemy units. Snapshots are when you do a quick shot. Now, I have to double check because I'm pretty sure I know for sure that if you do a snapshot, that you turn the. Okay, I'm pretty sure I got that right. Just let me do quick, because I'm pretty sure that snapshots, when you do a snapshot, that then it is your unit is then marked as of fired, and you can't move it in the next turn if you do a snapshot. Versus an opportunity fire. Now, here's the one thing you got to remember about movement and opportunity fire. Each time that your unit moves, your opponent, or any, if you have more than one, you know, one, your opponents, their units can say they want to have opportunity fire on that unit, assuming that, you know, they're line of sight and so forth, they're within range and all that kind of thing. But so then at that point they have to be resolved, even if the unit is not finished moving. So in the middle of moving, like if in the case of infantry, I just read that. If I recall correctly, infantry have two units of movement. So in the case of open grassland, that's one takes up one movement point, I guess, is a way of describing it. Or hills or rough or, you know, those are all one. So a infantry unit can then move, if it can move two, if after it moves one, it can have opportunity fired against it. In which case, that has to be resolved. And then depending upon whether, depending upon the results, they can either continue on or they are stuck or or they're dead, you know, little things like that. I'll talk about opportunity fire a little bit later on. And there's a little note here that says it would be a good idea to stun any enemy units which could interfere with your plans. So in other words, during the fire, it's suggesting that during the fire phase, that if there's any units that you think could use are set for opportunity fire, because at that point, you know your opponent's units that are set for opportunity fire. So for those units that are set for opportunity fire, what you might want to do is see if you can fire on those units first. And so that those are either removed or stunned. One of those two. Next step is transporter artillery phase. A nasty idea. These are advanced rules to use this powerful weapon. And when they mean powerful weapon, they're not kidding. Because if you just think about it for a moment, what that means. What it means is that you got a transporter in space. What a ship will do. Actually, I don't think it has to be a ship. But anyway, what can happen is that something is transported into mid-air. And when it's transported into mid-air, just like gravity, come down, and anything below it can be basically wiped out. You know? So instead of having to fire from a long range, you just transport it above the hex and go, and you can wipe them out, possibly, you know. That's really, I'd have to read up on the rules here, and whether, because I'm not sure if they describe exactly how that works, whether it's completely ballistic or you actually can have it so that they are, they have engines, basically, to have them go faster than the rate of gravity, because of, I can imagine, in the case of, let's say, a moon, where gravity is very, very low, that you'd want, you'd like to use transporter artillery, so you basically plop them above the opponent, your enemy, and then rockets just engage it and have it so it kills them that way versus, you know, if it's gravity, it might be a lot slower to, and the actual velocity that it gets to is going to be a lot lower, and therefore would kill less people. So it might not remove the enemy units that you want to be removed. And lastly, is last step in the sequence of play for an active player's turn is that the active player then turns all his upside down units, the ones that do fired, use close assault, or moved, basically. Those are the three things. And turn them upside right. And obviously, that means also any units that had previously been stunned. They don't mention that here, but to me, that's a ramification of just describing that one way of getting it, a unit turned upside down is being stunned. This ends the player's turn, and other players become active player and conduct the player turn. When all players have conducted their turns, one game turn is marked complete. This may have effects. Additional units are scheduled to arrive, and if a time limit for the scenario, if neither situation applies, then players do not actually have to keep track of the game turns. So, yeah, just a reminder that you don't have to keep track of game turns if there's nothing in a scenario where there's a time-limiting factor involved, or you know, you don't have like reinforcements. Like in the scenario, the reinforcements are coming at the end of turn three or beginning of turn four. You know, I'm not sure. I've not read through the scenarios to know that. I think the first scenario that I was talking about, it's a 10-turn scenario, and if you do not basically wipe out the people, the townspeople, and take control of the town within 10 turns, they escape and you lose. Because I think they assume, you know, reinforcements come and take them away. So that's the sequence of play. Let me... Now, I'm sure you can understand some of these concepts when it comes to combat, which is, of course, spotting. A unit cannot be targeted if they cannot be seen. Shocker. No, I'm not. Iggy, I've not actually played Starship Troopers. I know we mentioned that last week, the Avalon Hill game. As I said, I had read the rules because my brother, I think it was my brother. Actually, I don't know who bought them. I just remember we had them downstairs. I don't remember how we got them. I just know that they were downstairs. For all I know, my father got them from my brother. Because we had quite a few Avalon Hill games. Including, I still remember the one that we played a lot, which was Stocks and Bonds. That was a great game. Striker. I remember Striker. Wow. That was a crazy stock. Because Striker could go up really fast and go down really fast. So depending upon the die roll for how the market was for that turn, Striker could go up a tremendous amount or go down a tremendous amount, and you could lose your shirt. You know. And as I said, Iggy, you know, I haven't played it, so I have no comparison. This is when it comes to Starfleet Marines is the only, okay, I was gonna say the only infantry game I've ever read through and actually played. That is incorrect. There's actually one other one, which it was actually a Civil War game, which Doug, my friend Doug, he said, "Oh, this game, it's a quick learn. You'll learn in like 15 minutes, and then we'll be playing." No, I learned for the next 2 hours on how to play this game because of he kept on coming up mentioning these rules, is what he kept on mentioning, so that I always was learning what the new rules were. Now, how they compared to that Civil War one, and I don't remember the name of it. I know there's quite a few out there, and I apologize because I only played once. It's hard to play again. I was going to say Band of Brothers, but I know it wasn't Band of Brothers. Band of Brothers was a movie. It was not a board game. No, it might have been also a board game. So when it comes to... definitely compared to that game, this is, I think, comparable to a certain degree. The big thing is, of course, is for that game, the sequence of play was quite a bit different. And I think there were some different mechanics involved with that. And as I said, with Iggy, have you played Starship Troopers? Is my question for you. I'm assuming you have. That's why you asked the question. So you want to know if it's familiar to you. Because I know, I think you've played ASL, Advanced Squad Leader, which I've definitely not played. I know it's basically the Starfleet battles of infantry games. Is my understanding of ASL, which I'm not sure how well ASL is selling these days. If it's having a kind of a comeback, like Starfleet Battles is, because of the whole COVID thing, people in my mind have been forced to slow down and do something outside of going out into the world and getting busy that way. Yeah, I thought you'd played ASL. Because I thought I remember you mentioning that last week. But anyhow, so the craziness is when about the, okay, because you got the spotting rules, and I was terrain gets involved and so forth with spotting, and also you can have terrain, which is covering terrain. Covering terrain can be used for can modify those things, and sometimes you can also block spotting. In this case, it mentions forest and town hexes. Yeah. Oh yeah. Wow, that's surprising. But that's Iggy. That's great to hear. Great to hear. I wonder. Well, I'm assuming the reason why that's still popular is because of you can actually simulate World War II, because Lord knows World War II combat, i.e., not the guerrilla warfare that is involved in Vietnam, is more prevalent. Normal combat, what we consider normal combat, where you have troops on one side, troops on the other side, and they both have objectives. One's probably might be trying to take a town, the other one's trying to defend a town, or something along those lines. versus, oh, what's it called? Combat. Basically, unbalanced combat. The whole idea of basically guerrilla warfare, where you got a small force, asymmetric, that's it, asymmetric, where you have a small force versus a larger force. And there's, in that case, different tactics apply, and it's not standard combat tactics when it comes to guerrilla warfare, as what it's termed as, or asymmetric warfare. With combat, you have the spotting, you have the different modifiers in that. Scenarios. I can't believe I can't find this. This is ridiculous. Don't mind me. There it is. Jeez. Took me a moment. Found it. Movement rules. I was wrong. Okay. Movement allowances. The infantry has a movement allowance of 3. Militia has a movement allowance of 2. Commandos 4. Stunned. Stunned units. Civilians or stun units are 1. Tanks and trans howitzers are 5. Vehicles of all other types are 6. Shuttles 12, and fighters, gunboats, and ships are 15. Which is, to me, was always weird when it comes to, fighters and gunboats. I don't. 100 meters. That's around 300 feet. That might fit a gunboat, but I don't think a single hex could fit a ship. I've seen Vassal, and to me the biggest issue I have. To me, Vassal can be quite a bit. I like some of the way it works overall when it comes to the playing. But there's certain aspects which are kind of clunky. I don't remember if in Vassal, if you actually have a chat associated with a game, so you can chat with your play with your opponent while you're playing them online. I know that Vassal definitely supports the idea of play by email tremendously, because I looked into if SFB could be implemented via Vassal, and I came to the conclusion that it could not, because the big issue with SFB and Vassal is this. Vassal assumes there is no secrets, while in SFB it assumes you have secrets. You have basically a common place where you can store your secrets. Yeah, Iggy, that sounds about right. And there's no way of having it so that you can do what you currently can do with SFB Online, which is you have a secret, you have orders, which you plan on revealing later. After everyone's...
Is there something else I can help with?
But okay, in that case, Iggy, ASOS has hidden, well, has hidden units. I'll get back to that in just a moment. Let me just finish my thought, which is, and Vassal, to my knowledge, you can't have a secret. Everything is in plain text in the log that you would then that you ship from player to player. Now, and even online, I'm not sure how you would have a what's called a shared secret. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't. When it comes to shared, when it comes to hidden units, I can see how Vassal can support that. Now, the only question about hidden units, for me, would be. Okay. Well, hidden units, when it comes to a play by email scenario, would be relatively easy to do. Obviously, you have to. The one person would have to trust you in that you those hidden units would be units that you wouldn't actually would not be logged that would be sent to the other player.
You can I can see how you can do and even in
when it comes to Vassal, when it comes to playing online, again, you don't send the units to the other player, and that makes it easy enough to do because it will never show up. And it's single sided, you know, it's easy enough to do. But as I said, if you have, understood. I've not actually looked at it. My guess is that with hidden units, any movement would occur locally on that client and therefore would never actually show up in the play log. Because what happens in Vassal, because it's been a while, but it's not too long ago. It was 3 or 4 years ago. I forget when Les LeBlanc, this might be more, geez, maybe 5 years ago, might be longer. Les LeBlanc had actually a SFB Vassal plugin, and Steve Cole found out about it and he flipped his lid about that. But he let let him keep the cadet units on Vassal. So you can play the cadet version, which, again, you know, it's a good idea. Obviously, you don't have a lot of idiosyncrasies. All the features of SFB. So there's not as much. Yeah. Oh, I know the SFB cadet version is still there. The SFB, full SFB version is not. That got pulled. Though I think Vassal still has the Starfleet Battle Force on there, which I thought ADB was going to have removed because of copyright violations and so forth. Oh, I understand that the cadet only can be quite boring. But at the same time, the whole idea of the cadet version is it's a teaching, it's a training guide. If you actually get the training manual, which is free, you can get it from multiple e-tailers, you know, Warehouse 23, DriveThruRPG, Wargame Vault, they all have it. So you can get it from there. Also, if you're lucky, really lucky, you can have a physical copy, which I do, and I'm sure if you notice right here,
Shows you know, Task Force Games, and that tells you how old that copy is. So, obviously, it would be possible to play Starfleet Marines on Vassal. That definitely would be possible, given that it doesn't require any secrets. And all the rules, as you know, Iggy, Vassal doesn't implement the rules. It's just a tool for playing games, board games. That's all it is. And actually, that was one thing that I brought up as I was trying to get inspiration on what to do to the client to improve it. To make it more modern, which I have to get back to. I did some work on the robot player last week, but I need to probably pause working on that because there's certain things I need to work out when it comes to that. Vassal is good for solo play. But if you're talking about the robot player, I need to implement it. I work on I need to work out the details of how to connect the robot player because Jim, I forget his last name, he put it in the top of the code that he did the work for me. James something, and I forget his last name. Actually, I did quite a bit of work to get his robot player actually working. He did something smart. Smart, really smart. Which he created a test bed so that he could, put the piece here. Here's a different facings and so forth for that pieces. And, now, how does it see it? Does it see it in a proper location? Does it see that, it's off its shield number 6 or it's off its shield number 5? That kind of thing. Now, I'm not quite sure where he was going with that exactly. I have to check. But more to the point, he made it so that the robot player was totally independent of the engine driving it. So basically, it wasn't actually linked into the online client, and that's fine, because that's good in certain regards, when you do that, that allows just to plug it in to whatever that'll be used for, whether it's going to be for SFB Online or possibly even have it ported, for whatever. Unfortunately, the one thing that I looked at James's code and I'm going, dude, you try to make it way too freaking smart. The whole idea of the robot player I want him to write was take the rules out of the training manual, as dumb as they are, because they are dumb as a doornail. Okay, if it's an online client, if you're talking about the K Reef on D7 not getting B racks, I'd have to check, take a look see at that, because that should be working fine. I'll take a look see. Did you report it? Because if you reported it, I know I'm a little backlogged on the reports. I actually got like a few this week. And I need to take a look see at them, because in some cases some people accidentally press the send feedback button, and what drives me crazy is they say send feedback by accident, and then they click send, not cancel, send. If you did it by accident, why don't you just cancel? You know? So I don't know. And I know there's a reason why sometimes I think the reason why the send feedback button gets pressed is because the focus is not on the chat line. Well, yeah, Iggy, as long as you sent me an email, that should be good enough to report it too. Because of most probably it's something wrong with it's that, oh, okay, no. Back up. I know it has to be something wrong with the ship definition itself, which means it's not a change to the client, just needs a change to the uploaded definition. That's all would have to happen. So I'd have to take a look-see at it. I know right now also my email is backlogged when it comes to the library maintainers and where they are in this whole crazy process. But yeah, the whole idea of the robot player is to have so that the number one goal, first one, step one, when it comes to the robot player, is to have it so that someone can learn SFB using the cadet. I had not planned on connecting the robot player so it can play SFB or even FedCom. Because as it is, the robot player rules, as I think I mentioned before, basically it doesn't follow the rules. The only thing, the only rules it follows is that how often it can fire weapons. It does not, I understand, and I'd have to look at it because I'm pretty sure this is true, which is it's got a flat speed. Now, one thing that the rule book, you know, the boils never mentioned is like, okay, if what happens if you don't have enough warp power to actually move that speed? My guess is it doesn't care. It just keeps moving speed 12 for you know, on a 16 impulse chart. So that would be speed 24. And my guess is that it doesn't even follow. It doesn't follow the rules. It doesn't say, okay, what can we allocate this? You know, it doesn't. The robot player doesn't do energy allocation at all. It just goes around, and it tries to get to range 4 and then fires weapons. Now, my guess is the reason why James was doing the whole thing with the weapons and all, because he went, oh, you know, we need to figure out, okay, what, you know, what weapons are in ARC and all that kind of thing, which I already did. I have to check to see where I put the code, though. Also, I had to go back on one thing, which was seeking weapon movement, and that Jim Hart gave me seeking weapon movement rules, you know, code in SAS. It's like, okay, wow, that's interesting language. He wrote it in that, because I think, I'm assuming that he used that for his job. And I converted it to Java. So, you know, way back when, I didn't realize I had done this. Let me think. 13 years ago, I converted his code into Java. I just never implemented it. But and I see that, you know, on this one folder I have, it's like, oh, I finally remembered it was a .SAS extension, so I was able to find it that way. And then I saw, oh wait a minute, there's a Java program, you know, Java file, which is looks like the same thing. I looked through it, yeah, it's an implementation of what he did, you know, because I had to go back and actually relearn what he wrote and understand what he wrote, which was not that hard to do. just took me a little bit of thinking and understanding how the code worked. Not that hard. But overall, I saw the method in Java code, and I said, okay, wait a minute. Did I actually add this to the client? And I actually looked at it, and it's like, yeah, I had. Actually, I even had done some testing of the code. And I was looking, I had implemented some additional features to it because of I wanted to support heading. You know, have it so that a seeking weapon, if you get behind a seeking weapon will head. But if it heads, also it doesn't move, which is one thing I would have to wonder about for the robot player. What happens in that case? Do I allow it to head, or do I just say, no, you can't head, you got to do that seeking weapon movement? Now, the question, when it comes to the robot player that I have to resolve in my own mind, why I might shelve it just for a little bit, and that is, how do I connect the robot player code to the internals of the client? How do I do that? Do I do that do I keep the robot player as a black box? Just, you know, give it all the inputs, bum, 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 bum. You know, here's the positions of you and the target, you know, here are the weapons that you have, you know, is it a plasma, is it, you know, and so forth. Just give a listing of the weapons, and don't connect it to how the weapons are represented inside the client itself. Just have it completely separate, which could be not that bad of an idea, because of then it would let me to use that robot player for not just SFB, the but also for FedCom or FedCom. I think that's the only two that actually do combat. And even the whole idea of, well, seeking weapon stuff, that's different. That's one thing I never did. That's one thing I asked about a while ago, which was, would people want to see automated seeking weapon movement rules? Some people said yes, but some people said no. I don't want to see that in tournament play because of the big concern of a player might win because of the client let them win. You know, they moved the way they properly. The algorithm was better than the actual player himself. And I can see that. You know. But anyhow, I think I'll wrap up for this evening. I will probably get back to Starfleet Marines maybe next week. I will definitely update it a little more and hopefully maybe even give a working sample. A little better than what Steve Cole did, because actually if you want to watch a working sample of how Starfleet Marines is supposed to work, there's actually Amarillo actually did post a YouTube video with and the person who did it was actually Steve Cole. Showed an example of, you know, of I think movement and combat. And as I mentioned, when it comes to Starfleet Marines, the big issue there is just that, you know, it looks simple, but then you start reading the other rules that are associated with those steps, and you go, whoa, you know, you have to remember about these other things that can happen during those steps. With that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.